Welcome back to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Knox, and joining me on the phone right now is Mr. Matt Rosenberg. Mr. Rosenberg is the author of a book called What Next to Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. And Mr. Rosenberg and I are going to take a look at the Rittenhouse situation, and the jury now has that case and is in deliberations. Mr. Rosenberg, welcome back to Talk of the Town.
Hey, Steve. Thank you. Very good to be with you again.
Looking forward to our conversation. So I don't know about you, but I have been just stunned by this case. I've been watching so much video, reading so much about this Kyle Rittenhouse case, and it's really just amazing to me how divisive this case has become for this country.
I agree. I think there's been a pattern of whipping boys in the mainstream liberal media, from Nicholas Sandman to Kyle Rittenhouse, including Brett Kavanaugh, and even going way back, maybe even Clarence Thomas. And the tendency is always to take people whom you might not agree with and turn them into bad people right away, even if there's legitimate debate. And I understand that, you know, this was a very serious matter, right? We all know that. Two people died. Another one was wounded. It was a kind of a dire, hard situation. But, you know, we'll see what the jury says. Obviously, Kyle Rittenhouse and his defense team appeared to make a very strong case that he acted in self-defense. I just despair a little bit at the divide in our nation these days, where every possible thing that we can become, you know, bitterly divided about, we do. And that extends to what's going on in our cities and who's responsible for the violent crime that's occurring every day, way beyond anything that ever happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, not to minimize it. So, you know, I'm sitting here right near the city of Chicago where I grew up. And as you know, I've had concerns about the violent crime here. And I can tell you, since last time we talked, Steve, it's even more through the roof than it was then.
Yeah, I've got a story here that was in the Chicago Sun-Times just a couple of days ago about this this Chinese student from who had not really been in Chicago for all that very long, who's now dead. He was murdered in Hyde Park.
That one just kills me, Steve.
I mean, what if anything are the politicians in Chicago doing about this?
Well, it's ironic and sad, and I should first mention Hyde Park is the neighborhood where I grew up. It's, as you know, home to the University of Chicago. My dad taught there. It really hurts to see this, although we should remember, you know, it's not just when it hits, you know, an integrated neighborhood like Hyde Park or a white neighborhood. This happens all the time in the city's black neighborhoods, and frankly, white progressives don't notice till it hits close to home. But what can we do? I think, for instance, our Cook County Board President, Tony Preckwinkle, you know, should never 5 years ago have successfully lobbied in the state capitol for a new law to make carjacking not an adult felony anymore for teenagers. We have a big problem with teenagers hijacking cars, armed teenagers hijacking cars. We've had almost 1,500 such carjackings this year. We're already past last year's total. And too often, this killer in this case, or this alleged killer, the man who killed Dennis Zhang, the University of Chicago graduate student who came from China, the man who was charged with killing him was on probation for carjacking. And so instead of him being on probation, what if he was behind bars? But our Cook County board president comes out and says, well, gee, we're going to have to put our heads together and come up with some good ideas about what to do about crime. Well, if 5 years ago she had not lobbied to make it easier for teenage carjackers to not face felony charges, you know, this might have turned out differently. And there have been, you know, three or four or five or six other cases where teen carjackers on probation later than as adults killed someone. So we got a problem here with lenience, with sentencing, with plea deals, and also with something called bail reform, which I know you're quite well aware of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in listening to you talk about what's happening in the city of Chicago, I mean, it's so reminiscent of what's happening here in the state of Connecticut. We have stories in the news almost every single day about carjackings, shootings, and when we do, and there's a situation in a town called New Britain here in Connecticut where someone, a teenager, had hijacked a car and actually killed a jogger who was out jogging. And it turned out when they caught this teenager, he had 17 priors.
Oh, my gosh.
Or 13 priors, and he was only 17 years old. It's like, how do you get 13 priors and are still out on the streets able to do what you're doing?
Well, yeah, it's nuts. And I think being juvenile, you know, really, really helps from the criminal justice standpoint. And, you know, young thugs know it, right? Until they're 18, it's basically do what you want, no consequences of any note. And then even after they turn 18, you know, with criminal justice having turned into social justice, it's very hard to get charges filed. It's harder to get convictions, and it's harder to get a meaningful sentence. So it's really not good. And the young man that's charged with killing Dennis Zhang, the 24-year-old master's student in statistics. He had just gotten a master's degree. Bright young guy with a bright future. He was killed so that the killer could fence his cell phone and laptop. He took Zhang's cell phone and laptop and sold them for $100. So this guy died for $100 at a pawn shop. Yeah, and it's just you're scratching your head. And there have been 5 murders in Hyde Park so far this year. At least one of them also was allegedly committed by a young man on probation for carjacking. He killed a 73-year-old black veteran and grandfather named Keith Cooper, who was coming out of a grocery store in a neighborhood shopping center that I used to go to all the time myself. He was bringing groceries back to the car so he could go over to the home of his daughter and granddaughters and fix them dinner.
It's just out of control. I'm 60 years old. I've been on this planet. I've seen a lot. But one thing that I've never seen before, personally, with my own eyes, has been crime. I've up until recently, I've just never been in the right place at the right time. You know what I mean? It's where mm-hmm. I happen to witness it. And just in the last, I would say, month and a half, I've seen two situations with my own eyes. I was sitting at an intersection at a red light, and a couple of cars flew through the red light shooting at each other.
Wow.
Just bullets just flying all around. And I'm like, and it took me a second or two to realize what was actually going on. I was like, oh, my, there's an actual shootout going on right here in the middle of the day, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then there was a car chase that just occurred here in the area that I actually watched a part of right in front of me. This guy driving around 60 miles an hour behind an elementary school being chased by police officers in the middle of the day, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, it's just, like I said, I've been on the planet for a long time, and it's only been recently that I've actually witnessed these things with my own eyes. I mean, that's very telling as far as I'm concerned, because that means that it's starting to become far more prevalent than it ever has been.
Well, you know, rolling shootouts now, frequent thing here on Chicago. Walking downtown with my wife recently, I noticed a guy casing us out. You know, I looked back over my shoulder, looked at him full on, and he sort of slunk away. So there's guys down there now waiting to pounce. It's like citizens are prey, plus you got the gangbangers with their beasts that turn into rolling shootouts. I think the big issue here is parenting. It's the old-fashioned thing. How is it that these young men are being raised this way so that they think this is okay? And I can tell you, I've been conducting an informal focus group, Steve, just by going around promoting my book and writing about it and talking to friends and being active on social media. And what I'm hearing from progressives, and a lot of my best friends are progressives, I got to tell you.
Well, it's Chicago.
Well, yeah, and it's just, you know, I roll that way. I talk to people of all political persuasions, but what I keep hearing is very frustrating to hear, because it's, well, we need more social service programs. We need to spend more money, Matt. What do you expect? And I'm thinking, really? You know, we need single-payer health care and free college tuition before young black men will stop killing each other? Is that really right? And it goes to, number one, the racism of the left, which is that, you know, blacks can't be held to the same expectations as whites because of centuries and decades of injustice meted out to them in the past. That still here in 2021, you know, all bets are off. We need to have a sliding scale of moral accountability. And who in their right mind would actually buy that? Most of the black people I talked to on the south side of Chicago when I did field work for this book don't buy that one bit. So you've got whites buying into the BLM line of no accountability for black people. You've got the media buying into that. And so now if you talk about good parenting, it's racist. The good news is, and I may have mentioned this the last time we talked, there are people out there in the African-American and Latino communities who are serious and solid citizens. There are two-parent families. There are entrepreneurs, Christian homeschooling moms. There are people going about things the right way, even if they had a rough start. And there's also some interesting economic development success stories here in Chicago and some interesting challenges to try and turn around neighborhood downtowns that have fallen on hard times. So it's not all tragedy and blight and horror. This city still has a lot of greatness wrapped up in its DNA, you know, just like New York City, for example. Even, believe it or not, San Francisco, if you get outside of the Tenderloin, that's another favorite place of mine. But, you know, I'm hearing from people in Sacramento, in Rochester, from you, from people in cities all over the country. Something dark, very dark, is going on around crime and, you know, constraints that aren't there anymore on civil behavior. Something has gone very, very wrong. And I don't know, Steve, do you feel like it all started to head south after George Floyd? I don't know what triggered this.
Oh, I think it goes back well before George Floyd. I think it goes back even as far as Michael Brown and the reaction to that. And, you know, just the will. And what's interesting to me about it is people are more than willing to put up defenses for people that they, when they know nothing about what the situation is. You mentioned Brett Kavanaugh. We had people calling into the show here that just believed whatever was being said about him because he was the victim, not the victim. He was the criminal. He was the villain of the approved villain of the left for that news cycle, and it didn't matter how you know, he defended himself. If he got angry because of what was being acclaimed about him and he got angry, well, that just proves that he's a bad person. I mean, when they choose their villains, they are absolutely adamant about destroying that person. And we see it here with Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, we've got all of this crime going on all over the country right now. But this one kid who, by all accounts, as far as I can see, and I know I'm not a jury and I'm not making the determination, but it looks like he was simply trying to defend himself from some pretty violent characters. But he's now the chosen villain for this news cycle, and people literally want him to die. People who would normally be defending him if he was of a different race want him to spend either the rest of his life in prison or want him to be killed. It's unbelievable to me to see how so many people are so willing to just throw aside their quote-unquote strongly held beliefs as long as they get the appropriate villain that they can destroy.
Well, you know, it goes back in my mind to a guy named Stalin, who sadly we have a statue of in a central square in my other hometown of Seattle. He said, "You must pin the convict's badge on your enemy." He said, if you see a stinking pile of garbage by the side of the road, you don't need to poke around in it to know it's a stinking heap of garbage. And think about, I had to research Lenin because I wrote a column opposing the statue. And I think about those quotes, you know, that is exactly what the left is doing now. They're pinning the convict's badge on anyone that stands in the way of their rhetoric and their worldview. And it's that thing again. And, you know, to be fair, Steve, the right does this sometimes too. It's like, turn the opposing voice into a bad person, right? And if we're going to continue with that as a society, it's going to become impossible to talk about anything. And that matters because it will become so much more difficult to actually solve our problems, like the horrible policy problems we have at the federal level, inflation, federal debt, plenty of other things, and then to solve the problems in our cities. And I believe that, you know, as our cities go in the United States of America, so goes the nation. And wherever you look, from coast to coast, from top to bottom, our mid-sized cities and our larger cities are in crisis. So we need to get busy with making our streets safe, making our schools work, fixing our local court systems, which are an absolute wreck now, and in many cases, fixing our city finances and our state finances, which are being utterly destroyed, as I think you know well, Steve, by public employee pension debt. So there's an awful lot on the to-do list here, and we're busy all tearing each other's eyes out. You know, how is this going to change? I'm not entirely sure, but I think it has to start in a way from the grassroots level. So in the neighborhood groups, in the church pulpits, in the parishes, and actually in the classroom, where sadly now, you know, kids are taught that one way of thinking is right and the other way of thinking is evil. We've got to actually, I think, teach civics again.
Yeah.
And what if we had debate teams again?
Yeah, exactly.
I did debate. You and I are about the same vintage. I remember debate assignments in high school social studies class. That was a good thing. We need to get back to that.
Well, and I think we also need to put down the phones, put down the Facebooks and the Twitter, and because you talk about where can we, you know, what can we point to as part of the reason for this getting out of control. And I believe it's that people are capitalizing on the fact that everybody is just waiting for the next outrage. There are many people who are getting very, very rich selling their version of reality and then using social media to sort of continue to keep that pot at a rolling boil because they benefit from it. And I think if people would understand, just because somebody is angry about something, it doesn't make it a cause. It means that that person has their opinion and let them have their opinion. You know, if someone disagrees with you, that doesn't make them evil. They have a difference of opinion and, you know, either engage with them on that or ignore them. But you don't have to spend your whole life being angry about something somewhere happening.
I agree completely. In fact, today I'm going down into the city of Chicago. I'm not taking my wallet with me, and I'm not driving.
Jeez.
But I'm going to have lunch with a guy that has read my book and has about 50 different Post-it notes on different pages, because he sent me a picture of things that he'd like to challenge me about. And I'm looking forward to meeting with him, because he's a neat guy, and his politics are different from mine. And I think that we all need to do more of that kind of thing, you know, learn how to disagree civilly with somebody, maybe even break bread or have coffee with them and learn to listen again. You know, I think that could get us very far down the road toward where we need to be again.
I also think we need to stop allowing politicians to capitalize on this as well. Unfortunately, everything in our modern day life has become so politicized. I can't think of a single topic that somebody can't find a political angle to benefit themselves at most of the time. We don't really hold our elected representatives to account for some of the stuff that they say or that they do. And we see it at the federal level. We see it at the state level. They just say anything. They just spew lies to get people angry, and they're never held to account for it.
Well, and Steve, I've got an idea I'd like to throw out, and I'll try and be very succinct. And this is me speaking as a longtime journalist. I think we need more sort of civically motivated data journalism. And that means that new media sponsors have to step up as the old line newspapers continue to crumble and fade. We see some scrappy upstarts. I once ran a thing called Public Data Ferret, where I dug out data sets and government reports, like auditors' reports mm-hmm. and inspector general reports, and put them into an originally reported online news database. And if we had more reporting that just focused on the facts, like, say, that latest Congressional Budget Office report, right, about the real impact of the proposed infrastructure bill. And I'm just making that one up, but you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. Or the federal inspector general reports, or your local city government inspector general report, or a data set showing, expenditures per pupil by school district versus SAT score. That was a really good one I saw a few years ago, a data visualization using the Tableau tool. There's all kinds of great stuff that data journalists could do. If we could get away from the name calling and the turf protecting and get back to the actual facts, that would be a great start. Maybe people could start to meet in the middle. So I want to encourage that. You know, how it happens, we'll have to see. It's usually, you know, one project at a time, but that kind of stuff is out there. I think we need more of it. Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe we can start talking again.
Well, and maybe if we start to take, you know, not give our media outlets so much power over the narrative and understand that they are in the business of making money. They are not in the business of informing anybody of anything. And, you know, be skeptical. I say this on the show all the time. Just be skeptical. I'm not saying you have to disbelieve everything, but just be skeptical. Ask questions. And if it doesn't make sense, there's a reason why, you know. And but anyway, I think we're a long way off from that. But, Matt, I want to thank you, as always, for your time. I always enjoy our conversations. And where can people find the book, What Next Chicago?
Yes, indeed. They can find the book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and just enter into the search box, What Next Chicago. They can also just do that search on Google and they'll be led right to the Amazon page. They can also check out my website, which is called ChicagoSchooled.com, and that's schooled with a K.
S-K-O-O-L-E-D?
Correct. ChicagoSchooled.com, and there's a place to buy the book at that site as well.
Well, I hope you enjoy your conversation this afternoon, and hopefully we'll be able to learn about the outcome of that conversation, because it sounds like you're in for a rather interesting discussion.
I am indeed, and I'm looking forward to it. I want to use my listening muscles today. I've had my say in the book, right? I've had my say,
yep.
So now it's my turn to listen.
There you go. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to talk, Matt, again, and we'll look forward to having you back, all right?
That's excellent, Steve. Thanks again. I look forward to it.
Take care, sir. And we'll take a break, and we'll be back to finish. And that was Matt Rosenberg. The book is What Next Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. And as you heard, you can find it everywhere books are sold. We'll be back after these words.